This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. Great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We're seeing some sunshine right now, but expect a shower or a thunderstorm later on in the western suburbs. A high today of 83, currently 82 at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. From Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, we've got losses today of about 0.4% across the main averages. We are still in the green for the week. The Dow down 117 points to 25,083. NASDAQ losing 32, holding at 78.22, and the S&P down 11 at 28.05. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is higher by 0.1%. We're not just talking about any kind of weather. At Travelers Insurance, losses from damage claims for spring hailstorms and tornadoes jumped 21% from a year ago to $488 million. Stock in Travelers is down more than 3%. Allstate, locally based, facing similar headwinds with all of the catastrophic expenses the companies had to pay. Oil is headed higher, up 1% to $69.39 a barrel, lower by 2% for the week. Last week was the slowest at the nation's unemployment offices since 1969. The Labor Department says new unemployment claims declined unexpectedly to 207,000 last week. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we're back to the tariff war as the president threatens the EU. And how steady is the economy? We're going to take a look.
Also, Technology Thursday. The same technology behind Bitcoin may be coming to our everyday lives. We'll also get some analysis of the $5 billion Lincoln Yards development that is planned along the river. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday. Wi-Fi networks in airports and other places pose a security risk. Let's get some information now from Jerry Irvine.
We'll talk about that coming up a little later on in the broadcast. Right now, though, President Trump set to impose tariffs on auto imports. That's despite opposition from domestic car makers and dealers. Several key reports out today. We're joined to talk about all of that by Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh. Gus, looking at all the data that we now have, what do you think is most significant out of this package?
I think that we saw unemployment insurance claims remain at a very low level for the middle of July, so it looks like the job market remains in excellent shape in mid 2018, excuse me. We continue to see that the Conference Board Leading Economic Index was up 0.5% in June, and so it looks like the economy will continue to expand at a pretty solid pace in the second half of 2018.
Interested if you think that we might get to 4% growth, which has been talked about, and if so, what kind of an impact, positive and negative, that might have?
You know, we may see a quarter or two of 4% growth. I think that the U.S. economy isn't built to expand as quickly as it has in the past, particularly over the longer run. So we're going to see some stimulus from the tax cuts and the spending increases that Congress passed. I think we'll see strong growth in the second half of 2018, but then I think we'll see it slow in 2019 to something closer to its long run level of around 2.5% or so.
We continue to hear about the threat of what is happening with the yield curve. Are you worried at all?
I am watching that. We're seeing short-term rates move up more quickly than long-term rates, so the yield curve has narrowed. Traditionally, the yield curve has been a good indicator of recession when we see short-term rates move above long-term rates. There have been some structural changes in the economy, and so the yield curve may not be as quite as good as an indicator it has been as it has been in the past, but certainly I am watching that, and that is something to be worried about. I don't think it's going to invert. I don't expect it to invert over the next year or so, but certainly if it did invert, that would be a negative sign for the U.S. economy.
And if it did invert, what does that mean?
It could mean that a recession is coming, not imminently, but we traditionally see a recession about 9 to 18 months after the yield curve inverts. Financial markets are worried about long-term growth prospects, so we see long-term interest rates move below short-term interest rates. Its predictive power may not be as strong because of structural changes in the U.S. economy, but certainly if we did see it invert, that would be worrisome.
No sign at all of a let-up in this trade war back and forth, especially involving China, also including the EU. Do you see that there's any way that something positive may come out of this, or is this just going to create challenges for the world economy, and not only just ours, but the world's economy?
I'm hopeful that this is all a lot of noise and really doesn't lead to much actual trade barriers. I think there's a lot of posturing on all sides. I'm hopeful that all sides will step back and recognize that a trade war is in no one's best interest. That being said, it's entirely possible that we could see miscalculations on the part of the United States, on the part of our trading partners, and that would be a big negative for global economic growth and in U.S. economic growth.
Is there a way to narrow the trade gap in a way that economists would say benefits us, benefits our workers, while also not destabilizing the rest of the globe?
Sure. I mean, we could certainly reduce trade barriers by the United States, reduce trade barriers by our trading partners. We could also, another way to do it would be to reduce the federal government's budget deficit. That would help reduce the trade deficit. So there are ways that would reduce the trade deficit without causing damage to the global economy. Sure, we could impose barriers on other countries, but that hurts the U.S. economy and really doesn't do much for growth over the longer run.
And who specifically, what sectors would be hurt?
Well, I mean, I think consumers would obviously be hurt a lot by trade if we see a big tariff on imported cars. We buy a lot of imported cars in the United States, so that would impose huge costs on U.S. consumers, on automakers that, U.S.-based automakers that sell imported cars. So certainly that would be an area that would hurt. I think building would be hurt by restrictions on building materials. We've already seen the impact of higher tariffs on imported steel and aluminum, and that's raised building costs. Manufacturers that used imported goods in their production processes. So there are a lot of sectors that would be hurt by substantial trade barriers between the United States and our trading partners.
Nice to talk with you, Gus. Thanks for joining us. Gus Fauché is chief economist at PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Up next, avoiding cyber criminals when using your electronic devices in airports.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday here on the Noon Business Hour. Wi-Fi networks in airports and other public places pose a significant security risk for you. Let's get some help and insight on how to protect ourselves. Jerry Irvine, CIO, Prescient Solutions, also a member of the Secret Service's Cyber Crime Task Force based here in Chicago. Jerry, it's sort of interesting when you're talking about Wi-Fi in airports, because a lot of people like the convenience, but you're saying there's some danger there.
Yeah, there really is. And it's not just airports. It's your coffee shops, donut shops, any place where there's publicly accessible Wi-Fi. There's somebody there or a system there that is trying to copy your information. The problem with this is that you're talking on a wireless device, and all of your user information is going through the air to their wireless access point up in their ceiling, right? Well, I can sit there with my laptop and listen to everything that you type in, and I can actually take copies of it and then use it again at any point in time in the future to grab your user IDs, your passwords, your financial information. So it's extremely dangerous to use wireless access points.
So if I'm sitting there on my phone and I'm connected to Wi-Fi, how is that different or more dangerous than if I'm surfing the web just via the data that I get from my cell phone carrier, as opposed to the Wi-Fi?
That's a great question. So in your phone, when you're connected with 4G or with your phone communication of in and of itself, that's a point-to-point connection. It goes directly from your device directly to the internet service provider, whether it's Verizon, AT&T, or whoever it is. In a Wi-Fi environment, what's happening is your device is communicating wirelessly in an unencrypted manner, right, to that access point where 50 other people in that building, or, for example, at an airport, 30,000 people throughout the entire terminal are all communicating on it. I have sat in different airports here in the Chicago metropolitan area, and we're able to see as many as 1,500 to 2,000 devices communicating on it just by sniffing the network, going out and finding different PCs and different Mac devices, iOS devices, Android devices. You can see everything.
I have gotten messages before from my bank wanting to know if I had actually made this transaction. Is that something that kicks off when there is this public hacking?
Well, what happens is when you get on a separate network, your bank may not recognize your device because it's coming from a different IP address. So it's going to come back and they're going to say, was this actually you? Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. And it may not be if you've been using publicly accessible Wi-Fi, right? So can you do it? Yes. Is it dangerous to do it without any other tools? It's not a matter of if you're going to be hacked, it's when you're going to be hacked, okay? Now, there are tools that you can use that will make this more secure, and some of them are free. You can get a VPN, which stands for Virtual Private Network, and there are software-only devices. Probably one of the best free ones that are out there is CyberGhost. And what this does, you install it on your PC or on your phone, and what happens is it now encrypts all of your data. So before it leaves your phone or your PC, it encrypts it and then sends it through that wireless access point over to a server where it decrypts it and then sends it for you. So your data never actually is on that unencrypted wireless network. So that's the best way if you have to use a Wi-Fi environment. The best way is use a VPN. But as you mentioned before, Cisco, if you use your data on your phone, that's extremely safe. Now, most of us today, or a lot of us today, have unlimited data. So what I do is I just tether my PC to my phone. I use my phone to connect in that way. And it's 4G is fast, 5G is better. You can use your device in a secure manner.
Thanks for all the information, Jerry. Nice to talk with you. Jerry Irvine is a member of the Secret Services Cyber Crime Task Force here in Chicago. Still ahead on this Technology Thursday, understanding the rapidly growing area of blockchain technology.
WBBM News Time, 12:25, a check of Wall Street from Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, the Dow is lower by 99 points or a third of a percent. We're at 25,101. NASDAQ down 17, S&P lower by 7. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is higher by a quarter percent. Crude oil futures also higher now by 1.33% at $69.67 a barrel. As for grain prices, we turn to Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Lisa. Grain markets are somewhat higher as we move through the noon hour. Early activity was dominated by spread, buying corn, selling beans, buying wheat, and selling beans. This morning's weekly export sales report was at the upper end of expectations, with new crop sales, the unknown destination being a major feature. Weather maps are favorable, but signs of heat moving into the Midwest as we move into August is a concern. Corn futures up 3 to 3.5, beans up 0.5 to 1, and the wheat market up 7 to 8 cents. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Kurt. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are losing ground. We'll look at the markets, and that's just ahead.
Technology Thursday, we learn about the rapidly growing application of blockchain technology.
A proposed development would completely transform a 70-acre site along the Chicago River on the north side.
Dozens of activists stage a protest outside Mayor Emanuel's home over the death of a Southside man shot by police last weekend.
Congressional hearings are being planned in the wake of President Trump's questioning of the extent of Russian interference in U.S. elections.
On the markets, Dow down 108, the Nasdaq off 19, S&P 500 down by 8.
Lots of clouds headed into Chicagoland. Fewer and fewer of us seeing the sunshine as some rain and thunderstorms are on the way. High today of 85 degrees. Right now it is 84. The noon business hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Well, the markets are taking a bit of a hit today. We're joined by Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management. Welcome back to the noon business hour, Vahan. What's moving the markets downward?
Well, you know, I wouldn't be too excited about today's downward movement in the market. The markets have actually been doing quite well yet recently. But, yes, I think, you know, today there might be some increased concerns about trade wars and or trade skirmishes or whatever you want to call them. And some people have made very strong statements about the situation with China, saying that we've been in a trade war with China for a very long time. And then, of course, most recently, President Trump came out and criticized the Fed for increasing interest rates, and many people see this as meddling in the Fed's business because the Fed, of course, is supposed to be completely independent of the president.
Yeah, let's take that right there. The Fed voting to keep the up the the numbers a couple of times in the last year. Don't you believe that that's necessary?
Well, if the economy is indeed strengthening, and all of the indicators suggest that it is, and if the unemployment rate is very low, as it is, I think it makes perfect sense for the Fed to start gradually tightening, increasing the interest rate, and also selling off assets from its balance sheet. You know, we went through this period of incredibly low interest rates and quantitative easing and the Fed buying all kinds of assets, and they need to reverse this. So this certainly seems like a good time to do it. One of the concerns I have, however, is that even though the Fed is tightening and selling these longer-term assets from its balance sheet, only the short-term rates seem to be responding. Long-term interest rates still remain incredibly low.
If the Fed doesn't, you know, as you say, continue this, is there a chance that if there's another economic downturn, they really don't have as many tools as they need to try to help that if they don't get interest rates up?
Well, of course, the Fed could you know, give us another round of quantitative easing. And of course, they have raised the Fed funds rate several times already, so they could reverse that and lower the Fed funds rate. However, I think the Fed is being very careful. You know, I think they are also concerned that long-term interest rates have not gone up, and they certainly don't want to, you know, create a situation where we end up with an inverted yield curve, which could suggest that a recession is coming.
Yeah, back to trade for just a moment. What sort of advice do you give investors, given the fact that we really don't know? There's lots of uncertainty. Will these tariffs stick? Will there be different tariffs? You know, will they go away? How do you tell people to invest given that uncertainty?
Well, you know, of course, the big question is, you know, why is Donald Trump doing this? And is it just a negotiating tactic? And is he going to get rid of these tariffs as soon as he, you know, manages to reach a better deal with many of the countries he's negotiating with? So this could only be a temporary situation, and if that's the case, then the markets could rally. However, on the other hand, if you're really concerned about these tariffs, then maybe you should focus your investing on companies that do most of their business, if not all of their business, within the United States.
IBM is having a pretty good day, up almost $4 on earnings beat. Tell us about IBM.
Yeah, you know, IBM is actually one of my favorite companies right now, and it is a sizable position in all of my portfolios. And, of course, it is a very large international firm. They do quite a bit of business overseas. But, yeah, this stock was just so out of favor and so beaten down. As you may remember, Warren Buffett had a large position in this company. Berkshire Hathaway, I should say, had a large position in this company. And they, you know, recently have sold it all. So, you know, this put IBM on, you know, on a lot of people's not very favorite list. And so the stock had really fallen tremendously and became a tremendous value. Now we have a situation where expectations are extremely low. It became relatively easy for IBM to beat the expectations. You know, they did better than expected on earnings, better than expected on revenues. This is a very strong company. They have a dividend yield of way over 4%, and they have tremendous cash flow. They expect to have about $12 billion of free cash flow this year alone. So I think it's a very undervalued stock, and it's certainly not a stock that's going to, you know, double, triple, or quadruple like an Amazon. But I could certainly see this stock, you know, rallying 20 to 30% in a relatively short period of time.
Vahan, always nice to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us. Vahan Janjigian is Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management in Greenwich, Connecticut. Up next, Technology Thursday, getting a grasp on blockchain technology.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And Technology Thursday continues. This afternoon, we're exploring the expanding use of blockchain technology. Bitcoin, you may know it from there. It is growing here in Chicago. We welcome Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management, also portfolio manager of Senecal's blockchain enterprise investment strategy. He's based here locally in Glenview. Bill, first question we have to ask, because a lot of people still unfamiliar with this, it's still very new. When we say blockchain technology, can I give us a beginner's primer on this?
Sure, I will, Cisco. Thank you. Well, blockchain is a form of technology that for the first time allows people to transact and transmit assets like stocks, bonds, money, real estate titles, intellectual property, music, art, anything of value, person to person or peer to peer, without the need of some kind of trusted intermediary like an escrow company, a credit card processing company, a commercial bank or a mortgage lending firm or a stock exchange. We traditionally trust these third-party intermediaries to secure and title ownership of digital of assets. And now for the first time in history, blockchain permits us to send digital assets to anybody, and we're assured of their authenticity.
So is there just a different third-party intermediary who's handling this, or is it simply point-to-point?
Well, that's a great question. See, up until now, we just had the Internet of Information. So when I send somebody a PDF file or a spreadsheet, cloud storage files, I'm only sending a copy of it. I still maintain the original. But with blockchain technology, some very clever code, we're able to now do that with digital assets. Because when you send a copy of something of value, it's good for information, but it's a horrible idea for assets, right? Like if we're business owners care about about having original attested information. And so it's not a third trusted party person or a centralized database. Blockchain really is this distributed network of computers that provide this third party validation of information. So what happens is we're actually able for the first time in history solve what's called the double spend dilemma. In other words, when I use blockchain and I send somebody a value, stocks, money, bonds, whatever, I no longer maintain ownership of it. It actually, the full original copy goes to the other person on the other side. So what happens and what facilitates that is high-level cryptography in a network of computers where a brick-and-mortar intermediary is no longer needed.
I see that you feel that the Internet is entering a second era. That's certainly what it feels like. If blockchain requires fewer humans, does that mean there will be fewer jobs in the future?
Well, that's a great question. We could say the same thing about robotics, taking over manufacturing. We can say the same thing about the stock exchange. You know, as a former member of the Chicago Board Option Exchange, there's nobody left on the trading floor. It's all done by computers and high-speed algorithmic servers and traders. So to answer your question is yes, blockchain is a threat to anybody who earns a living as a middleman. It's a threat to companies and businesses that are used to middlemen. But on the positive side, the fact that we can now send money or value or assets anywhere in the world almost instantaneously at the speed of light and have 100% certainty that their authenticity is guaranteed, I think that those benefits outweigh what we might see in displacement of workers, because money now is going to move at the speed of light for anybody, anywhere in the world, anywhere in the globe, no matter how remote you are. You'll be able to participate in economic inclusion for the first time in history.
Chicago's getting on the train. It is holding a two-day international conference about this next month.
Yes, it is. On August 24th and 25th, it's going to be at a historic Navy Pier, and it's called The Voice of Blockchain. It's sponsored by the Chicago Blockchain Project. And I'm really excited about this because Chicago is positioning itself as the blockchain capital of the world, and maybe very few people know about that, but we're bringing together really these best of class and blockchain developers, resources, venture capital, you know, real people, real projects doing real stuff. And we're really blessed to be here in Chicago to have a function like this in our own town.
Bill, how long until you think this is mainstream? Because I think to a lot of people, it's still, it just sounds like something that's really difficult to grasp, especially how they would be involved in it.
Well, you know, if I was talking to you about downloading music or streaming movies real time in my automobile as I was driving coast to coast in 1993, when we still used like a modem to connect to the internet, you would think I was out of my mind, right? So it took 20 years really for the internet to develop to where we feel very comfortable with it. And, you know, digital radio and real time streaming and digital TV, smartphones. I mean, these are all relatively new inventions that we're able to participate in now, and we kind of take it for granted because we use it so much. I think blockchain is still going to take 10, 15, 20 years to fully develop, but the seeds are being planted today. They're being planted now, and especially here in Chicago, and that's just a great thing to be a part of.
Yeah, sure is. Yeah, really dramatic changes and good explanation. Thank you. Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management, also portfolio manager of Senecal's Blockchain Enterprise Investment Strategy. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come, a proposal to transform a huge site on the north side of Chicago.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Developer Sterling Bay has unveiled its plans for a former industrial site along the Chicago River between Lincoln Park and Bucktown neighborhoods. Let's get details from Danny Ecker, reporter at Crane Chicago Business. Danny, this is really an ambitious plan.
Yeah, huge. I mean, for Sterling Bay, which is, you know, been one of the most prolific developers in the city for some time now, this is the biggest project they've ever done. We're talking about more than 50 acres, and could be, if they add more land to it, close to 100 acres, all along the north branch of the Chicago River. They've been, you know, kind of releasing pieces of their plans for several months now, but last night at a community meeting, they said, all right, here's what we want to do, and it's huge. You know, we're talking about skyscrapers, 12 million square feet of offices and retail and hotels and residential units, and thousands of jobs, thousands of homes. And so it's a massive plan that they're eyeing to take 10 years to complete, and $5 billion.
It's a bet on the economy too, isn't it?
For sure. And I mean, it's something that by the time it would, you know, if it would come to fruition, would probably be in an entirely new economic cycle by the time it's all done. But, you know, it's a bet on not just on the economy, but also on downtown Chicago, which is seeing so many more young people, you know, staying in the city longer than they used to, wanting to live and work in the city. And that's what they're trying to create.
Is this completely detached from the prospect of Chicago getting the Amazon headquarters, or is that kind of tied in at all?
You know, it's one of the few sites that Amazon toured when they stopped by Chicago a few months back in their search for the HQ2 campus. There are a lot of different options, you know, and I think that Amazon, the sweepstakes, the bake-off that they've kind of been running here for quite a while now, is really kind of just had a lot of different developers say, okay, here's what we can do, and really kind of tune up their game to say, look, we can do, look at the space, look at our vision. It's not necessarily, I think that it's very unclear whether Amazon will choose Chicago, and if they do choose Chicago, would choose this site. But they certainly are out there saying, hey, we're open for business if Amazon wants to come here. And that would definitely change the dynamic of what they have planned, no question.
Yeah, for sure. Danny, always good insight. Danny Ecker, reporter at Crane's Chicago Business. An update on the markets from Bloomberg. WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of the markets from Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, the Dow is down 98 points, or a third of a percent. NASDAQ lower by 12. S&P down 6 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is higher by a third of a percent. We are seeing a retreat by American Express, and that's pressuring the blue chips. Wall Street is unhappy with the company's earnings report. Investors were looking for a higher profit forecast based on increased credit card spending. Travelers is also one of the Dow's biggest decliners after the insurance company reported coverage costs have topped $300 million for the last 6 quarters, as victims of wildfires, hurricanes, and other natural natural disasters file claims. With business at 25 and 55. Live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago. WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.